Chapter 5. And do you know what I thought? I thought I would part company as soon as I could. I wanted to have my first command all to myself. I wasn't going to sail in a squadron if there were a chance for independent cruising. I would make land by myself. I would beat the other boats. Youth. All youth. The silly, charming, beautiful youth. But we did not make a start at once. We must see the last of the ship. And so the boats drifted about that night, heaving and setting on the swell. The men dozed, waked, sighed, groaned. I looked at the burning ship. Between the darkness of earth and heaven she was burning fiercely upon a disk of purple sea shot by the blood-red play of gleams, upon a disk of water glittering and sinister. A high, clear flame, an immense and lonely flame, ascended from the ocean, and from its summit the black smoke poured continuously at the sky. She burned furiously, mournful and imposing like a funeral pile kindled in the night, surrounded by the sea, watched over by the stars. A magnificent death had come like a grace, like a gift, like a reward to that old ship at the end of her laborious days. The surrender of her weary ghost to the keeping of stars and sea was stirring like the sight of a glorious triumph. The masts fell just before daybreak, and for a moment there was a burst and turmoil of sparks that seemed to fill with flying fire the night patient and watchful, the vast night lying silent upon the sea. At daylight she was only a charred shell, floating still under a cloud of smoke, and bearing a glowing mass of coal within. Then the oars were got out, and the boats forming in the line moved round her remains as if in procession the longboat leading. As we pulled across her stern a slim dart of fire shot out viciously at us, and suddenly she went down, head first, in a great hiss of steam. The unconsumed stern was the last to sink, but the paint had gone, had cracked, had peeled off, and there were no letters, there was no word, no stubborn device, that was like her soul, to flash at the rising sun her creed and her name. We made our way north. A breeze sprang up, and about noon all the boats came together for the last time. I had no master sail in mine, but I made a mast out of a spare oar, and hoisted a boat awning for a sail, with a boat hook for a yard. She was certainly overmasted, but I had the satisfaction of knowing that with the wind aft I could beat the other two. I had to wait for them. Then we all had a look at the captain's chart, and, after a sociable meal of hard bread and water, got our last instructions. These were simple. Steer north, and keep together as much as possible. Be careful with that jury rig, Marlowe, apostrophe said the captain. And man, as I sailed proudly past his boat, wrinkled his curved nose and hailed, "You will sail that ship of yours underwater, if you don't look out, young fellow." Apostrophe, apostrophe, he was a malicious old man, and may the deep sea, where he sleeps now, rock him gently, rock him tenderly to the end of time. Before sunset a thick rain squall passed over the two boats, which were far astern, and that was the last I saw of them for a time. Next day I sat steering my cockle shell my first command with nothing but water and sky around me. I did sight in the afternoon the upper sails of a ship far away, but said nothing, and my men did not notice her. You see, I was afraid she might be homeward bound, and I had no mind to turn back from the portals of the east. I was steering for Java, another blessed name like Bangkok, you know. I steered many days. I need not tell you what it is to be knocking about in an open boat. I remember nights and days of calm when we pulled, and the boat seemed to stand still, as if bewitched within the circle of the sea horizon. I remember the heat, the deluge of rain squalls that kept us bailing for dear life, but filled our water cask, and I remember 16 hours on end with a mouth dry as a cinder, and a steering oar over the stern, to keep my first command head on to a breaking sea. I did not know how good a man I was till then. I remember the drawn faces, the dejected figures of my two men, and I remember my youth and the feeling that will never come back anymore, the feeling that I could last forever, outlast the sea, the earth, and all men, the deceitful feeling that lures us on to joys, to perils, to love, to vain effort, to death, the triumphant conviction of strength, the heat of life in the handful of dust, the glow in the heart that with every year grows dim, grows cold, grows small, and expires, too soon before life itself. And this is how I see the East. I have seen its secret places, and have looked into its very soul, but now I see it always from a small boat, a high outline of mountains, blue and afar in the morning, like faint mist at noon, a jagged wall of purple at sunset. I have the feel of the ore in my hand, the vision of a scorching blue sea in my eyes. And I see a wide bay, smooth as glass, and polished like ice, shimmering in the dark. A red light burns far off upon the gloom of the land, and the night is soft and warm. We drag at the oars with aching arms, and suddenly a puff of wind, a puff faint and tepid and laden with strange odors of blossoms, of aromatic wood, comes out of the still night, the first sigh of the East on my face, that I can never forget. It was impalpable and enslaving, like a charm, like a whispered promise of mysterious delight. We had been pulling this finishing spell for 11 hours. Two pulled, and he whose turn it was to rest sat at the tiller. We had made out the red light in that bay and steered for it, guessing it must mark some small coasting port. We passed two vessels, outlandish and high-sterned, sleeping at anchor, and, approaching the light, now very dim, ran the boat's nose against the end of a jutting wharf. We were blind with fatigue. My men dropped the oars, and fell off the thwarts as if dead. I made fast to a pile. A current rippled softly. The scented obscurity of the shore was grouped in two vast masses, a density of colossal clumps of vegetation, probably mute and fantastic shapes. And at their foot the semicircle of a beach gleamed faintly, like an illusion. There was not a light, not a stir, not a sound. The mysterious East faced me, perfumed like a flower, silent like death, dark like a grave. And I sat weary beyond expression, exulting like a conqueror, sleepless and entranced, as if before a profound, a fateful enigma. A splashing of oars, a measured dip reverberating on the level of water, intensified by the silence of the shore in two loud claps, made me jump up. A boat, a European boat, was coming in. I invoked the name of the dead. I hailed. Judea ahoy! A thin shout answered. It was the captain. I had beaten the flagship by 3 hours, and I was glad to hear the old man's voice, tremulous and tired. Is it you, Marlowe? Apostrophe mind the end of that jetty, sir, apostrophe, I cried. He approached cautiously, and brought up with the deep sea lead line which we had saved for the underwriters. I eased my painter and fell alongside. He sat, a broken figure at the stern, wet with dew, his hands clasped in his lap. His men were asleep already. I had a terrible time of it, apostrophe, he murmured. Man is behind not very far. Apostrophe, apostrophe, we conversed in whispers, in low whispers, as if afraid to wake up the land. Guns, thunder, earthquakes would not have awakened the men just then. Looking around as we talked, I saw way at sea a bright light traveling in the night. There's a steamer passing the bay, apostrophe, I said. She was not passing, she was entering, and she even came close and anchored. I wish, apostrophe, said the old man, you would find out whether she is English. Perhaps they could give us a passage somewhere. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he seemed nervously anxious. So by dint of punching and kicking I started one of my men into a state of somnambulism, and giving him an oar, took another and pulled towards the lights of the steamer. There was a murmur of voices in her, metallic hollow clangs of the engine room, footsteps on the deck. Her ports shone, round like dilated eyes. Shapes moved about, and there was a shadowy man high upon the bridge. He heard my oars. And then, before I could open my lips, the East spoke to me, but it was in a Western voice. A torrent of words was poured into the enigmatical, the fateful silence. Outlandish, angry words, mixed with words, and even whole sentences of good English, less strange but even more surprising. The voice swore and cursed violently. It riddled the solemn peace of the bay by a volley of abuse. It began by calling me pig, and from that went crescendo into unmentionable adjectives in English. The man up there raged aloud in two languages, and with a sincerity in his fury that almost convinced me I had, in some way, sinned against the harmony of the universe. I could hardly see him, but began to think he would work himself into a fit. Suddenly he ceased, and I could hear him snorting and blowing like a porpoise. I said, "What steamer is this, pray? ? What's this? And who are you? Castaway crew of an English bark burned at sea. We came here tonight. I am the second mate. The captain is in the long boat, and wishes to know if he would give us a passage somewhere. Oh, my goodness. I say. This is the Celestial from Singapore on her return trip. I'll arrange with your captain in the morning. Did you hear me just now? I should think the whole bay heard you. I thought you were a shore boat. Now, look here, this infernal lazy scoundrel of a caretaker has gone to sleep again, curse him. The light is out, and I nearly ran foul of the end of this damn jetty. This is the third time he plays me this trick. Now, I ask you, can anybody stand this kind of thing? It's enough to drive a man out of his mind. I'll report him. I'll get the assistant resident to give him the sack. Bye. See, there's no light. It's out, isn't it? I take you to witness the lights out. There should be a light, you know. A red light on the there was a light, I said, mildly. But it's out, man. What's the use of talking like this? You can see for yourself it's out, don't you? If you had to take a valuable steamer along this godforsaken coast, you would want a light to. I'll kick him from end to end of his miserable wharf. You'll see if I don't. I will so I may tell my captain you'll take us? I broke in. Yes, I'll take you. Good night, he said, brusquely. I pulled back, made fast again to the jetty, and then went to sleep at last. I had faced the silence of the East. I had heard some of its languages. But when I opened my eyes again, the silence was as complete as though it had never been broken. I was lying in a flood of light, and the sky had never looked so far, so high, before. I opened my eyes, and lay without moving. And then I saw the men of the East. They were looking at me. The whole length of the jetty was full of people. I saw brown, bronze, yellow faces, the black eyes, the glitter, the color of an Eastern crowd. And all these beings stared without a murmur, without a sigh, without a movement. They stared down at the boats, at the sleeping men who at night had come to them from the sea. Nothing moved. The fronds of palms stood still against the sky. Not a branch stirred along the shore, and the brown roofs of hidden houses peeped through the green foliage, through the big leaves that hung shining and still like leaves forged of heavy metal. This was the East of the ancient navigators, so old, so mysterious, resplendent and somber, living and unchanged, full of danger and promise. And these were the men. I sat up suddenly. A wave of movement passed through the crowd from end to end, passed along the heads, swayed the bodies, ran along the jetty like a ripple on the water, like a breath of wind on a field, and all was still again. I see it now, the wide sweep of the bay, the glittering sands, the wealth of green infinite and varied, the sea blue like the sea of a dream, the crowd of attentive faces, the blaze of vivid color, the water reflecting it all, the curve of the shore, the jetty, the high-sterned outlandish craft floating still, and the three boats with tired men from the west sleeping unconscious of the land and the people, and of the violence of sunshine. They slept thrown across the thwarts, curled on bottom boards, in the careless attitudes of death. The head of the old skipper, leaning back in the stern of the long boat, had fallen on his breast, and he looked as though he would never wake. Farther out, old man's face was upturned to the sky, with the long white beard spread out on his breast, as though he had been shot, where he sat at the tiller. And a man, all in a heap in the bows of the boat, slept with both arms embracing the stem head, and with his cheek laid on the gunwale. The east looked at them without a sound. I have known its fascination since. I have seen the mysterious shores, the still water, the lands of brown not ions, where a stealthy nemesis lies in wait, pursues, overtakes so many of the conquering race, who are proud of their wisdom, of their knowledge, of their strength. But for me all the East is contained in, that vision of my youth. It is all in, that moment when I opened my young eyes on it. I came upon it from a tussle with the sea, and I was young, and I saw it looking at me. And this is all that is left of it. Only a moment of strength, of romance, of glamour of youth. A flick of sunshine upon a strange shore, the time to remember, the time for a sigh, and goodbye. Night goodbye. He drank. Ah! The good old time, the good old time. Youth and the sea. Glamour and the sea. The good, strong sea, the salt, bitter sea, that could whisper to you and roar at you, and knock your breath out of you. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.